Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zendad.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax, and let us help you improve your art of GMing, one show at a time.
Banter, banter, banter. And we are entering the banter segment.
I will always, always love that bit, sweetie. I always will.
Yeah, well.
Not much I can do about it, but I'll always love it.
Yeah. So.
Holding up with dog days?
I don't want to go there, but.
Hey, I haven't missed a day. This is better than what I did last year.
I haven't either. And it's been rough.
You're an old hand at this, though.
Not really. Last year was the first year I did it, so.
At podcasting, you dingus.
Oh, well, that I might be.
Yeah. No, it's like I'm trying to come up with, you know, and then edit it and make it all nice and, excuse me. Yeah. No, but oh my God, I never realized how boring I am.
Oh, hush.
No, dude, my last episode, the one I did, was how to make Puerco Pibil, okay?
Okay, well, I haven't gotten to that one yet, so you're not allowed to talk about it until after I've listened.
Nothing wrong about talking about recipes.
Ooh, I know. We got a new voice.
We do have a new voice. Who is this new voice that we have hanging out with us?
A placeholder?
A little more than a placeholder, my friend.
Yeah.
No, it's Gardamoshe.
If you call yourself that again, I am going to beat you with your own hat.
Why do you think I only take soft ones around you?
Because usually if yours is too soft, I usually have a hard one of my own, and you're usually amused as like, where the hell did you get a World War I German like helmet? Where the hell did you get that one?
Flash cosplay?
But, yeah, so we, with Null being out, and we're not really sure when he's going to be back, because he's still got a couple of eye surgeries that he has to go through, and I'm not going to push him to start doing stuff with us when he's trying to get some other things that he needs to get done before he goes back under. So I figured I would ask Gardamoshe, since he was nice enough to help me so much at Origins, to if he wanted to come on, since he's already going to be helping with doing some of the blog posts and stuff. So, and he said, let me check. And I think it was like an hour later, he texted me with, I'm in.
That was the longest hour of our lives.
You gotta coordinate schedules when you're not on.
No,
your...
I was at the DMV when I was waiting for you to respond as well. I am not kidding.
That would be the longest hour of your life.
Yep.
Oh.
But yeah, this is we've got a trio working again. I mean, me and Zen, we're good, but when we get, oh my gosh, it's Gardamoshe, the lore master of almost every goddamn RPG that has ever come into existence. And spreadsheet master.
Just the ones I've read.
How many of those are there?
A bunch. There are a few I'm not that versed on the lore for.
I have one right now that I know he doesn't know.
That is very true.
What, did it come out last week?
It came out right before Origins.
Yeah. Okay. Dude, he hasn't had a chance to get his hands on it.
I know. That's because I haven't given it to him yet.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, I've started playing Earthdawn. Awesome. And he's already knocked out a character for me. And I'm like,
Yeah. Did I read to you the one sentence, like, highlight description of the setting?
I don't think so.
So this is, it's just a single sentence. Now there's two paragraphs before it, but this one sentence sums up the entire setting. You're in a haunted Victorian era city, trapped inside a wall of lightning powered by demon blood. How do you not want to play this game?
I can work with this.
Yeah, it just sounds so cool. So I'm getting ready to really, like, I think sadly I'm going to have to wait until after Dog Days is over, because with doing a show every day, and it's the end of summer, so I'm really beat. So I'm taking some time, like, once Origins is over, then we'll sit down. I want to actually sit down and have a discussion about the game at some point after August is all done. And I think this one actually comes out, I think this episode comes out right at the end of August. So hopefully fairly soon after this, like about another month after this one comes out, hopefully we'll have had enough time to sit down and read through the book and maybe do like a review of it, because it's pretty big.
Schnazzy.
Yeah, but I really want to. I think it's amazing from what I've looked at so far. So yeah, that's what I want to get working on once we're done with all of this and writing my adventures.
Writing your adventures?
Uh-huh.
This like a memoir?
I'm actually going to start. So I've been building a game world for Pathfinder for the last couple of years. It's been a lot of intermittent, but in the last couple of months, I've really kind of knuckled down and started building a lot more than I had. Like, last year during the Dog Days, I released some stuff about it. And basically, I'm going to start... I decided that some of the really old school adventures had really neat ideas. Like, part of the world building was actually built into those early adventures. The players never saw some of it, but the GMs saw it all if they were reading the books. And there was all of the lore and the geography, it was all in those. And it was, as you started playing more and more, you found out that this was actually Greyhawk. And it was the history of Greyhawk. You may have had the box set at that point, which had some information, but when you started playing the adventures, those actually opened up lots more. And so what I basically decided is I want to do, I'm going to take what I've already got and then I'm going to start putting it together into some adventures that people can play, and it'll like an arc line that'll take you from like certain levels to certain other levels. And so maybe some of it'll be mini campaigns, some of it'll be just individual one-off adventures, but I want to start doing that. And if I get enough interest in any of it, then doing like maybe a kingdom book. And if somebody's like, oh, that's really cool, and do another kingdom book. And if somebody goes, man, you've written like 25 adventures, you've got like 3 kingdom books, where's a world book? And just be like, well, I've been working on that too. Boom, here it is. And just be able to drop it if I got enough people that would be interested in actually reading it. So that's what I will be working on once all of this is over. So, But that's part of what I've been doing with Dog Days too, is some of those NPCs that you guys have been hearing are going to end up being people in some of the adventures and other things. Like there's one that's coming out compared to when this is recorded, it will be Aethelwulf. And that is going to become, because I'm not spoiling it at this point, but it's going to be, that particular character will be a villain at some point in an adventure. So.
Be kind of cool.
Yeah. Yep. So, gonna have to start working on that and finalizing all the bits for it. So,
it's gonna be awesome, I'm sure.
I'm hoping. So, but that kind of actually leads into what we're gonna talk about this evening, which is player buy-in. Now, when I say player buy-in, what I'm referring to is when you get, like, as the GM, you're like, okay, this is the kind of adventures I want to run. This is the system I want to run. And this is the world that I want to run in. Make something that fits inside that, using those 3 points of criteria. Because I have seen games where, you know, I say, this is the kind of games I want to run. This is the world. This is the rules set that I want to use. And I get things that don't look anything like what I asked for. And getting that player buy-in can help you better situate a game for the longer play. Now, how do we get that?
Garde Manger, you've been a little quiet. You first.
I think part of it depends on two different scenarios. One's a new group, one's your existing group. And one of the things, at least with your existing group, is that you know these people pretty well if you've played together for any length of time. And so you know which ones are going to do their best to stretch as far to the edge of what those 3 points are bound. And you know who's going to be game. But to get them engaged from the get-go, I like the idea of a session zero. I like the idea of generating the characters together because you can build out the relationships between them. And that seems to strengthen player buy-in. When dealing with a group that isn't the long-term group, hey, thanks for letting me join the table. Can we do... You've got to sell it.
Yeah,
and it comes down to how you sell it. And sometimes there are people who just don't want to play a certain type of game. Some people are never going to want to play an espionage game. Some people have an aversion to certain rule systems, like, say, Middle-earth role-playing's rule. That's a rule system. Some people just plain will refuse to ever touch Dungeons & Dragons.
That's true. Also, Rifts. Rifts is horrible for that. It's very polarizing.
Yeah, Rifts, I'll be honest, reading the books are fun. I will never pick up dice for it. The thing is, though, that if, especially Garde Manger, when you were talking about the building of a character and getting everyone to buy in, and here's the thing is, like, if you're starting out, like, everybody's new, and you're able to figure out, like, a genre or something, like, I'll be honest, Deadlands, I had never played it before, but all of us getting together and then, you know, I don't know anything. And the thing is, like, I'm not really strong on my American history of that era. All right. I like different parts of world history, but like right post Civil War, like, you know, afterwards, not really my strong set. Civil War, yeah, I'm pretty good at it, but anything afterwards, not so much. But we're all sitting, you know, around and we're drawing cards and in Deadlands, the GM's the sheriff, which is cool. So she's explaining how all this works, and she's pulling out chips, and she's, you know, telling us, hey, don't read these parts of the books, you know, because it can spoil stuff. You know, really getting us into the feel, because she knows her history. So she's giving us, like, the history spin, and, you know, we're also, as we're building up the characters, that's a way to get a buy-in, especially if it's something, like, unique. Because as the GM, as the all these characters are putting stuff together, you know, you can start one as a GM, you can figure out a way how to really tie your group together, which is nice. Which is really helpful just to help kind of like bring them in. But the other thing, and I love this, is that you're creating a gaming experience without anyone really having to roll dice with consequences, I guess is the best way to put it. You know, and they get invested because you're all helping each other, and you're just like, hold that point in the book, and then, you know, you're turning to your buddy and the GM's over there grabbing, you know, extra pencils and stuff like that. It's almost like a team building experience of making your characters rather than waiting the drop in, you know?
Yeah, and part of, I think, the strength goes to this hobby, this fun, is about telling stories. Have an analogy to a story or a setting that the players can grasp onto. If you pick up a Star Wars game and you're going to play Star Wars, all of you have a basic idea of the archetypes and how they relate to each other mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. world.
Yep.
And so if you can provide that kind of, hey, I want to play a modern kind of espionage-style game, think of it like Ocean's 11.
Ah,
right. If you can give them a touchstone.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
But there's also, and here's the thing is like the, as a good GM, it is imperative, at least in my opinion, to consume as much different types of media that you enjoy as you can, from video games, movies, comics. Yes, read comics. Moon Knight is awesome. Anyone that says otherwise, I will wag my finger. I just started reading it. Bite me. All right, but here's the thing.
It's so
here's
good.
The thing. I went in and I had never played Paranoia before. And you want to know what my analogy is now? Minions meets Super Meat Boy. You know, Super Meat Boy, it's crazy, it's silly, it's wacky fun, and you know, it's run, die, splut, run, but it's but the thing is, like, you add in the goofiness and the kind of, like, the adorability of the minions, you know?
Yeah.
If you think about it.
Here's another description. See how this works. Monty Python meets V for Vendetta.
Nah.
Okay, doesn't work for you.
Did not work for me.
No.
Okay.
But now that...
Monty...
It's a weird system. I like the system. Like, I've played it a couple of times. But yeah, it's one of those that's like... You get it or you don't yeah. get it.
But it's the thing and... is, like, it's the absurd, and it's not in the, you know, Monty Python. This is like really weird indie video game absurdness.
Yeah.
You know, and Super Meat Boy, especially with the number of times that you die, but the silly just goofballness of it kind of ties into it. You die a lot in Dark Souls, but I'm sorry, Paranoia is not Dark Souls.
No.
So, Zen, how do you sell someone on something like Paranoia that has a particular system? I'd say if they like the idea of the setting, they like the concept, but how do you get someone to buy into a rule set they may not be familiar with or maybe had a bad experience with?
Aside from cash bribes.
Aside from cash bribes. Actually, these are supposed to be your friends that you're playing with. And... I'm gonna tell you, because I've been toying around with putting together an actual play component for Seize the GM, and
you heard it here first, folks.
Somebody, And I said, this is kind of what I want to do. And his immediate response was, I don't want to play that game system. And I said, cool. I get it. It's not your thing. But, you know, this won't preclude you from if I do another system. But you just, you hate this one system. Okay, that's fine. And getting player buy-in, you have to know what people are willing to play and comfortable playing. Because, like, for me, I'll try almost anything. I may be really bad at it, but I'll still try. And I've always felt like the people that are just like, there's no way I can ever do that, ever. Well, have you tried it? No. Broaden your horizons. Give it a shot. I mean, what are you out, 4 or 5 hours?
Yeah, and the thing is that you're attempting to get somebody to buy into something they haven't tried before. And the thing is I hate to say it, always have a contingency plan in case something kind of catastrophically fails. You know, pretty much it's the no one wants to leave any type of game session kind of all like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If we're all trying and just nobody's really feeling it, we did this with the D20 Star Wars and our GM wasn't all that great. And let's just put it this way. Zippy, when he rolled his stats, rolled unbelievably awesome. And just the GM did not know how to deal with somebody, not only that had the good stats, but could role play that, you know, that's like a sophistication and intelligence. And, you know, and the thing is, like, we all would leave the game pissed off and feel like we wasted our time. So the thing is, what we'll do is, like, we'll do, like, the majority of our game first. We break for dinner and we break for snack time or we break for, you know, ice cream sundaes. If you're really scared about how well a game's going to do, ice cream sundaes. You prep that ahead of time. You know, something so that way, you know, if it's not going well, you already have a pre-built-in break. And then when we're all sitting around eating ice cream, we can talk about, okay, we don't like this, but why? What is it? You know, it could be like, you know, like none of us is really feeling it or how they built the world just isn't working. That kind of shit. You know,
right. That's actually a really good thing for once you've got that player buy-in. Like, yeah, I totally want to play that. That sounds fun.
But giving them the okay.
And then when it doesn't work.
But giving them the okay yeah. to not like it. This is the, you know, getting the buy-in, getting the, you know, come on, try it. You might like it. But allowing them to say, I don't like it afterwards. So no one feels, it's like, all right, I'll try D&D. I'll try D&D. And if you hate it, and you have tried it, and you still do not like it. Like, I do not like 5th Ed. I don't. I like it more if we did it in a Discworld, because that if it fits that a little bit better for me mentally. But I've tried it. I don't like it. Quit bugging me to keep playing it. Allow me to say I don't like it and then just go, you know, the one thing you have to do is, like, if you've gotten them to take a bite and they don't like it, don't harangue them. That's one of the big things that you can turn them off an entire genre for that.
Yeah, that's the other half of player buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
You can also turn them off to gaming. If you just keep pushing, no, you'll like it. Just give it some more time. You can actually get people that are just like, well, no, fuck, I'm not playing anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not playing anything anymore.
You can stop a whole group. But the thing is, like, if they're not liking it, you can ask, is like, hey, look, you know, I'll wrap this up really quick. But, you know, if the other players are really enjoying it, it's like, would you mind? But don't force them, you know?
Yeah.
Well, is it, in that level, that
other half. You as a GM if you do that. If you just, like, oh, you got to give it more time. It's just like, no, I'm hating this.
Yeah.
The idea is about acceptance, and getting a player to buy in means they have to feel like they have a choice. And if it's, you must do this, it generally won't end well. If it's a, this is going to be a lot of fun, I want you to join these other people, these other friends, we've got a great idea, they're more likely to come along. They're like, you know what, this isn't really my thing. I'm sorry, I thought you'd like that. Is there something that if we do next time you'd like to do? And get inspiration. Because as GMs, let's be honest, there's more than one story in our head. There's more than one.
There's always more than one story.
There's more than one combination of the setting, the system, that the theme that we want to do.
Yeah.
So leave yourself options. Like Jules said, I'm sorry that you didn't enjoy it. What was it? You just don't like elves, or you don't like switching between dice, or these other jerks at the table?
Yeah, what can we? It could just be that they don't like somebody that's at the table.
And you may not know that there's history there.
Yeah. So, I mean, getting your players to say, you know, yeah, that sounds like something that would be fun. You also have to accept that if you pitch an idea and you're like, man, I really want to run this thing, and you get people that just go, oh, well, I don't really want to do that. And don't push it. If you can't even get them to say, you know what? Because like right now, I was actually trying to pitch this to my wife, because I want to run, if I'm going to run with the group that I have, I want to run like a dark, gritty, horror-themed Pathfinder game. And her immediate response was, well, the characters become unplayable really, really fast, and it just doesn't work for that. And it's like, well, if you let some of the rules slide, it can work for that. And she's just like, no, I don't see it. And then I was just like, okay, I know where the line is. I can't get her into it. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I mean, this was something that happened tonight before we started recording. And so I just have to accept that I can't make that happen. And I'm okay with that. There are other games that are better for horror. But with our current group, I might be able to swing something, I might not. So that's another thing you have to think about, is the system that you want to run in, because that gets a little wonky too.
Mm-hmm.
So
system to setting matches is a whole nother main topic.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah.
And one
that is actually one that's on our list. Yeah.
But I think you're going to love that one. Am I right? But one of the biggest things is you're going to have, if you can't get the buy-in from your players, the thing is, you have to figure out, this is, oh my God, this is GM as therapist, but one of the things you also have to figure out is, why? Is it because they just don't like fantasy, or they don't like GURPS? Or is it because of what everyone else is playing? You have to figure out, is, you know, if it's one person, if it's the whole group, if it's, you know, if you're doing something as a, okay, let's all test this out and see how we're doing, see if we like it. You know, okay, but if, you know, everyone's kind of agreed and we're trying something and not everyone's like it, you got to ask, you know, kind of ferret out, is like, okay, is it the setting? Is it the rules? Is it the world? Is it Billy Bob sitting at the end of there because he had too much chili and he keeps farting? You know?
Yeah.
But the thing is, you don't want to be really nosy and pushy about it. It's a strange, strange balance. You know, it's like I had D&D because of a really crappy GM It's the entire team. How he awarded XP, it wasn't universal. You got XP based on what you did. And because of the kind of character I played, and because I actually outthought him from time to time, everyone else was two levels above me. And getting, oh, and it got bigger. And it's like, you know, I hated D&D, and I did not want to play. But everyone else wanted to do it, and I was just grumpy. Because it's like, no, I hate this. I freaking hate this game. I hate it. I just because of that experience. It wasn't because, you know, 3.5 completely and totally sucked and I hated it and everything was terrible. It was because of that one lousy GM, you know, it tainted that whole experience. Now, when I tried 5th Ed, it's just like, no, I don't. It's a flavor difference. You know, it's like Coke and New Coke. You know?
There's only Coke.
You know what I mean.
But to sum up, the best way to get a bunch of people bought into an idea in a game is get them together and actually have what we called that team building exercise.
Yeah, that session zero.
The session zero, that initial, you know, that could be fun with the analogy and like, yeah, I can do that together.
Oh, yeah. And now movie night, like if there's like we did with... Oh, God, I'm going to keep bringing up Deadlands because we just did this and we had, you know, like a John Wayne movie night kind of a thing. But we also had like, you know, the old school Western, but we also had those these creepy, disturbing as hell, like Western movies. And I'm like talking like super duper horror from I'm like, oh, my God, it's the one where you stick pull your head, you're like your head into your shirt. But we watched them all together and we check like we just to kind of get us in the brain space before we even did that. You know, it was great. You know, it's not just all just sitting, just rolling dice too. Sometimes it's, you know, like if you're gonna be doing a Firefly game, and the game system for that sucks in my opinion. But the world is so rich. Hey, you know what? Why don't you watch Firefly? You know, you all get together and watch it, and then you know, something like that.
Yeah.
And the important thing to remember is the buy-in goes both ways. If there are people or the group who just can't get into that idea, let it be. Try to figure out what it was to make a better pitch next time. But let it be and move on to plan B, or maybe pitch your plan A hoping they're going to shoot it down so that what you really want happens next.
Yeah. Yep. So, well, I think that kind of wraps that up in a nice little bow. So we're going to call this done. And like we always say, this is just scratching a very big, big rock. I mean, you can go forever on this. So.
Money bribes.
Yeah. But here's the thing, guys. If there are GM topics that you want to, you know, want us to talk about, you know, go onto our Facebook page, go onto our webpage, leave a comment in the doobly-doo, let us know.
Go to the group, because the group is where we're actually having more interaction. The Facebook page is just kind of where I announce when episodes go live. If you want to actually talk to us, we have a group, which is facebook.com/group/SeizeTheGMPodcast, I believe. I believe so. I could be wrong on that. There will be a link in the show notes as always. So, but yeah, that's the easiest way to get like fast feedback, because we are usually on there at some point during the day. So, but I think we're going to go ahead and lumber our way into stat blocks. And now we enter Stat Blocks. This is a segment where you can use something that we've created in your game tonight. All right.
Yes, unfortunately, with I leave for Gen Con soon. I apologize. I'm trying to get all my stuff done early. I did not get one done, so somebody beat me with a wet noodle.
It's okay. I wrote your thing is work makes me happy and work makes it so I can't do the things I want.
Yes.
And you know what, folks? I have been giving you stat blocks every single day for all of August. I'm taking a bow out this week. So
that leaves the newbie who actually did throw something together for the stat block.
I know, which is awesome.
Now, this is something to use in an espionage theme, not just an espionage genre. I think when you listen through, you'll see that you could adapt this a lot of ways. But it's about investigation, skullduggery, and powerful forces at work. So with that, let me tell you about the Blue Devil file. Now, the Blue Devil file is a document or record sought by, you know, different governments, companies, trading groups who want to use its contents to further their goals. Now, exactly what it is? Well, I see, that's the funny thing. Nobody's clear on what the file contains. Now, it was purported to be created by a private intelligence agency 20 or so years ago, and has now been stored on an obsolete medium. What medium, you ask? Well, that depends on where you're looking for this Blue Devil file, doesn't it? Now, the mystery deepens surrounding the Blue Devil file whenever it's rumored to be up for sale on a black market or in a back street somewhere halfway across the world. Numerous rumors over the past decade have it being sold to different groups, companies, but none ever seem to capitalize or grow stronger from its use. In fact, many grow weaker. Now, tracking down these supposed purchasers will only create changing descriptions of the file itself and the contents contained, perhaps passcodes allowing backdoor computer access to some of the most powerful servers on the planet, perhaps an ancient scroll detailing long-lost martial arts training and techniques, a statistical analysis of crop growth patterns for the last 300 years, or maybe even an empty file. Truly a MacGuffin. Now, regardless, the Blue Devil forces plans into motion, reveals hidden resources, and creates flurries of activity whenever rumors of it abound. And now, your handler has a job for you.
That is so cool! That is great, man.
Oh. Dang, dude.
Yeah. I think for the first one, you knocked it out of the park.
Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Holy crap.
Thank you.
Yikes. All right. Gautamange is just like, all right, you are the lore master. You're the spreadsheet master. You're now also a stat block master. What is it you can't do? Tell me. I must know your weakness.
I can't freehand draw with my offhand.
I can't either, but
yeah.
We must find something, and then I must challenge you to whatever it is you can't do off, so that way, something.
You're trying to pull a Beat Bobby Flay on me, aren't you?
Huh?
Food Network. Don't worry about it.
I don't really watch TV like. No, that Alton Brown was more my speed. It was, you know, Julia Child meets Monty Python and Bill Nye the Science Guy. But that was about it.
Complete with an actual degree and background in television production, which is why every single episode of Good Eats has a directorial shot they had not used before. Every single episode does something they had never done before.
I didn't know that. Cool.
Yeah. That's fun.
I mean, my thing is, like, that's where I got my recipe for my world-famous chocolate chip cookies that are still soft-bake. It's awesome. But I learned the science, which is awesome, because it's like, I'm sorry. Cooking is cool. Science cooking is really sexy. Talk nerdy to me, baby. Yep. All right. Do we have a lexicon here, Zen?
We do.
Lexicon, where we give you cool words to help improve your vocabulary.
All right. So, we have a word, and it is helidom. Now, this is a noun. Does anybody happen to know what this bad boy means?
Sounds Greek.
When copying my stat block into the show notes, I kind of accidentally saw part of
the answer.
Why do
you think I haven't looked at it yet?
He told me to copy it in there. No, it makes sense.
But I've learned how to add an angle that sheet so that way I don't.
All right. So it's actually a very, very archaic word. And it means something held sacred.
Okay.
And it is not actually Latin. It is Old English originally.
Oh.
And its first known use was before the 12th century.
Dude.
That's cool.
So this is a really old word. That's why the definition is actually the archaic what it used to mean, because they're going off of like what they know of the etymology being that it comes from holy, which is halij. So in Old English, and it made its way into Middle English, which is where halidom is pretty much a direct. There really wasn't much of a way to change it. So, yeah. So that is our amazing, amazing lexicon for cool. this time. So, and that pretty much wraps us up aside from shout outs, folks. So let's go ahead and roll into those bad boys.
Okay. Garde-Manger, you get to go first.
Why did I have a sneaking suspicion something like that was going to happen?
Because I'm evil.
Because I'm going to give a shout-out to the dog days of podcasting, and specifically 5 Degrees Off Normal, which has been an absolutely fascinating and enthralling listen this month.
All right, I am glad that we're a podcast and we're not videoed, because I'm as red as my sunburn. Although, well, I am proud of my latest episode, which is my recipe on Puerco PBL.
Which is good. Yeah, I have been, like I said, I have been swamped with 25 participants this year. It is insane trying to keep up listening to everyone.
Dear Lord, no kidding. I mean, it's awesome.
And there are some people that are doing like 20 minute at a time, like every single day. And then there's others that are like me that I'm doing. Mine is like 3 minutes. It's like one stat block. And
I'm
that's
doing
it.
About
because,
10, you know?
Yeah. I wanted to make mine short enough that I could easily get them done, because I'm actually writing up every single character that I do. So that is why. But, Jules, what are you going to shout out?
Okay, there is, let's see, how many days is going on? 20 days. I don't know if this, will this be up and enough? Oh, well. All right, there is a Kickstarter, and it's called The Anatomy of Animals. And it sounds a lot more boring than it is. It's done by Dave Kellett. And he's the guy that has done Sheldon comics, and he's doing this really absolutely brilliant sci-fi comic called Drive. Both of them, I check it out. But he's doing this Kickstarter called The Anatomy of Animals, classy hardcover book collection of comics featuring everything you need to know about today's modern animals. So there's a picture of a crab, and it's pointing at, you know, his eyes, and it says Ray-Ban applique. And then pointing at one of his legs. This second one is actually fake. And pointing to his underbelly. Sand is constantly in his undies. You know, stuff like that. And the art is adorable, you know, and but he started doing these in the Sheldon comic, and he had like the anatomy of a pug, you know, his point of the wrinkles, like, seriously, what's in there? You know, and it is, you know, they're cute and they're adorable, but he has done all these other animals. So he's putting a book together. So You know, check out on Kickstarter the Anatomy of Animals. And if unfortunately this goes up afterwards, at least go and check out his comic, Sheldon, his webcomic Sheldon at sheldoncomic.com. Because it's adorable, but oh my gosh, just the goofiness of just, oh, just like cats and pugs and, you know, God, what was the, I can't pronounce it. It's the axolotl. It's kind of like a, that mudkip looking kind of, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yes, Max's yeah. smile lets you know he just saved 15% on car insurance. You know, every handshake is a moist handshake. That kind of stuff. So it's, yeah.
Fun.
I enjoy it, so sorry about that.
No, that's fine. Mine is actually in a Kickstarter as well, and it might actually be gone by the time this goes, because it's only got, like, I think 18 or 19 days left. But it is the Bones 4 Kickstarter.
Dear God.
Yeah, they started another one.
Just say no, Zen. Just say
no. I am
no.
trying. I am trying. But in the base kit is a giant black dragon. And what were some of the already listed things for it? Oh, it's amazing. If I can find it quickly, I will totally talk about it more, because it's crazy. But since I can't seem to think about what's going on with that, yeah, there's all kinds of really cool stuff. Like, there's even like a pig dragging a pumpkin cart.
Aww.
As one of
my
the minis
cabbages.
In it. Yeah, it's like, there's really cool, fun things. And that's in the $100 price point. And if you get in at like the $1, you can actually increase your payment like afterwards, because that actually gets you into the pledge manager. So you don't have to buy like the core set. You could buy just like, I think, just bits off of the outside. So like, they have other options. Like, I think they have like the whole, like a bunch of the Chronosphere, which is like their time travel-y game, but it's all these minis for it. And that's like $50 for all those minis. If all you want are the Chronosphere stuff, they have some. They've got a fire giant hunter with, it looks like a Cerberus Ooh. Hound. And I mean, it's big. It looks so cool. And I'm just like, but I want them, but I don't need them, because I still haven't finished painting my Kickstarter Bones 3 set yet. So I have to be good about this. So I'm trying to keep myself away from doing it. But the other thing that I wanted to, which is not part of the Kickstarter, is because I alluded to something that was going to be happening if I can get the players together. And the thing is that it's going to be using the old school basic D&D set. So like the rule cyclopedia stuff.
Hello, Miss Dara, my lovely.
Yeah, so that is, I'm definitely, I want people to find these books, find PDFs of them if you can, and read it and play it, because it's kind of in the vein of that old school Renaissance that a lot of people are trying to capture. Well, why do an old school Renaissance when you could just play the old original game? So, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Rule Cyclopedia. So, yeah, we'll definitely continue to have this discussion about the things with that. And once we get a firm top thing to announce with that. There will be an official announcement that will come out as a little, probably like 5-minute show or something that we'll all get on and talk about it. So, all right. Well, I think that wraps us up, folks. So let's hit that outro and
we'll see you next week, guys.
See you guys next week.
You can contact us or the show by using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Our Twitter accounts are at Zended,
at Jules Podcaster,
and at No Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at Seize the GM.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com.
You can email me at zended@seizethegm.com.
Me at jules@seizethegm.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement is intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off of the album Ghost Machine, by the Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License.